Let's have a short story now on 4Extra. Lap of the Gods by Julia Stoneham introduces us to a couple who are on a sailing trip off the Turkish coast. But what will they find when they drop anchor in a quiet cove? The reader is June Barry.
The cliff, as they sailed towards it, appeared impenetrable. A mass of rock, tilting down, plunging into deep water. Yet there it was, clearly marked on their chart. A small inlet, the single break in a long stretch of coastline. They had made good time that morning. A soldier's wind had drawn them eastwards along the southern Turkish coast, and in an hour or so, had the breeze continued, they would have reached Marmaris. But at midday they were suddenly becalmed, the surface of the sea flattening under the hot sun, their boat wallowing on the slow swell. They knew there would be no wind before late afternoon, so an hour or two at anchor in a quiet cove was tempting.
"Still can't see it," said the man, rechecking his chart.
The woman leaned over his shoulder, putting a suntanned finger on the place where the inlet was marked.
"Should be dead ahead," she said.
The man went forward, leaned on the pulpit, and screwed up his eyes against the glare. Still the rocky shore appeared unbroken, blank and solid. Indigo blue water beneath the hull confirmed the reading on his depth gauge. They had a good 4 fathoms under them, and could risk creeping in, sails flapping for another 100 yards or so. Then he saw it, a narrow gap between 2 colossal slabs of rock. Through them, enclosed water glimmered, surrounded by steep, pine-clad cliffs. They stood off, lowered their sails, prepared the anchor chain, started the engine, and while the woman kept watch for submerged rocks, the man eased his boat carefully forward. It had taken them 3 weeks to sail the small yacht through the islands from Greece to Turkey. The April weather had initially been foul. Cold rains and adverse winds had hindered them. Twice they'd been hit by sudden storms which had laid them on their beam and forced them, under storm jib and reefed mainsail, to run for cover and lie amongst the sheltering caiques. Since they had rounded Cape Knidos, the winds had eased and grown warm. The twilights were violet and mild. Now, relaxed and rested, they forgot the anxieties of the early days of the voyage and dawdled along the breathtaking coastline. They had seen no one for days. Only the occasional clamour of goat bells, borne on the warm breeze, suggested the presence of herdsmen, scratching a living from the mountainous land that was slipping past the boat's port bow, while the horizon merged imperceptibly with a pale sky. They grew drowsy with a sense of space, of timelessness. Once through the narrow entrance, they found themselves in a small circular cove. The man lowered the kedge, watching its descent through water so clear that he could see the wisp of sand that lifted as it struck the seabed. He laid out the chain and signalled to the woman to cut the engine. The silence dropped over them like the spell of an enchanter. While the man drew the cork on the last but one bottle of the wine they had bought in Samos, the woman sliced up tomatoes and feta cheese, laid this on a bed of cucumber, loaded it with handfuls of black olives, drenched it in oil, garnished it with pepper, and cut thick slices from their last loaf of coarse, dry bread. After their meal, they made love and lay sleepy in the heat, while the little boat swung quietly at anchor, her shadow creeping this way and that over the white pebbles 3 metres beneath her keel. At last the man stretched, got to his feet, and naked, dived neatly off the stern. She peered down through the fractured surface, watching his skin take on a pale and then deeper greenish-blue tone as he swam down towards the seabed. Then he turned, kicked upwards, and broke the surface explosively, gasping with the shock of the cold water on his sunburned skin. She followed, striking out ahead of him, eager to reach the warmer shallows. They splashed ashore and over the hot shingle to a patch of close-cropped grass where cyclamen grew. All round them, the aromatic cliffs rose, cupping warm air resonant with the humming of bees. They lay in the sun, the drying salt prickling and tightening on their skin.
I have a sensation, said the man, looking out past their boat through the gap in the rock, that nothing exists beyond this place. Our house, our work, friends, responsibilities, all gone. I wish it didn't exist, she said, stretching out on the warm grass. I wish this was all there was, all there ever will be. We could make a libation to the appropriate god, put in a request that the rest of our lives be cancelled. Poseidon, suggested the man drowsily. He's looked after us so well these last few weeks. Then he raised his voice, pitching his question into a silence which absorbed it instantly. Did you hear that, master? They smiled. The man inhaled, relishing the scent of resin, thyme and lavender. Then rolled onto his back, opened his eyes, and allowed his mind to fill with the blue of the sky. A small white cloud was moving quite fast across it. At once, the tension was back. Time to move, he said, getting to his feet and pulling the woman up beside him. She, too, had seen the cloud. It was when they reached the water's edge that they heard the laughter. It began as a chuckle, low and mischievous. Then it grew, encircling them, peal after peal of bellowing mirth. Instantly their nakedness embarrassed them. The woman lowered herself quickly into the shallows and lunged forward, swimming fast. The man, close behind her, followed suit, head down, kicking hard towards their boat, making a dozen strong strokes before lifting his head for air. The woman was treading water beside him, her expression incredulous.
It's not there, she shouted, her voice shrill with alarm. Where is it?
Their boat was gone. Where, moments before, it had been rocking quietly at anchor, now there was nothing but the unbroken surface of the inlet. Frantically, they scanned every inch of the small enclosed space, while the laughter continued, amplified by the surrounding rock, ricocheting, howling, assaulting them from all sides. They floundered pointlessly towards the centre of the cove, the place where the boat had been. They swam in circles, turning this way and that in panic. Small waves slapped into their faces, blinding them with spray.
Stop it!
The man yelled, his voice thin and desperate.
Stop it!
The appalling laughter died abruptly, and, as suddenly, they saw their boat, its white hull gleaming, the steel ladder which gave access to the cockpit only feet from them. The woman hauled herself aboard, while the man, one hand gripping the ladder rail, looked back, scanning the dense undergrowth. The rising wind was stirring the leaves of the creepers and shrubs which festooned the cliffs, but there was no sign of human movement. No dark eyes peering, no chatter of goat bells to confirm the presence of a herdsman. Only an innocent rasp of wind in the crowns of the tallest pines. Without a word, the woman scrambled to the foredeck, where, hand over hand, she retrieved the anchor faster than she had ever done before. The man started the engine, and, when the kedge was clear of the water, opened the throttle. The boat moved forward, gathering speed as they approached the fissure in the rock. The wind, which now funneled through it, struck cold on their wet skin. The gap in the cliff seemed narrower than when they had entered the cove. Looming rock appeared to be closing on them. With inches to spare and the sound of the engine hammering between the two cliff faces, the man took his boat through, exhaling with relief as they emerged into open sea. They were out, pitching and slamming in the exposed water. While the woman struggled to stow the anchor chain and secure the kedge, the man took the boat straight out until they were well clear of the shore. When the woman came aft, took the helm and held the boat bow on to the wind, the man ran forward and, leaving the mainsail furled, set the Genoa, returning to the cockpit to winch in the sail. He took the helm and brought the little craft beam on to the wind. As the Genoa filled and began to pull, the motion of the boat changed, steadying under the influence of the sail, and they surged forward, riding the swell. He cut the engine. The sea slipped, hissing, under their hull. "Go below and get warm," he said to the shuddering woman. From the shelter of the cabin, as she wrapped herself in a towel, she said, "What idiots we are, being fazed by a harmless voyeur." They laughed, partly with relief at having successfully negotiated the difficult exit from the cove, but mostly to cover their panic at the apparent loss of their boat. But, as she toweled her hair, the woman's face clouded. "The boat wasn't there," she stated soberly. "Course she was," said the man, looking ahead now, picking out landmarks and relating them to his course. "Trick of the light, probably. She must have swung bow on to us. In shadow, with spray in our faces, we could have missed her." "We couldn't," the woman insisted, pushing her arms into the sleeves of her sweater. "She wasn't there, and then she was." "Too much wine with lunch, perhaps. Stick the kettle on, will you, love? Then come and take the helm while I get some clothes on." 2 hours later, they were on the town quay at Marmaris, moored up to an old wooden sailing vessel, whose master had taken their warps, helped them make fast their boat, and introduced himself. The German had sailed from Bremerhaven years previously, and was now living aboard his boat, moving at whim from one Aegean anchorage to another. He invited them to share his meal that evening. As darkness fell, and bearing the last of the Samoan wine, they descended into the lamplight of his warm, timbered saloon. "Bit of a blow this afternoon," the German said later, refilling the man's glass. "Coming from the west, you would have had to run before it. Must have been fun." "We came out of a cove into the teeth of it," said the woman, and, proud of her seamanship, added, "A Genoa run, all the way into Marmaris." "Cove?" "Yeah," said the man, "about 10 miles west. We were becalmed this morning and hove to for an hour or so." The German shook his head. "There is no longer any cove 10 miles west from here," he said, puzzled. "Easy enough to miss," said the man. "The entrance is narrow and almost invisible from the sea." "But I know the place," said their host. "I have anchored there many times myself. A small, circular inlet with a steep cliff all around, yeah?" "That's the one," said the woman. "We had lunch there, and swam. We were embarrassed by a Turkish peeping Tom." She was about to tell him how they had, for several anxious moments, thought their boat had dragged its anchor, but something in his face made her hesitate.
"But this is not possible," he said, "because 5 years ago there was a quake here. It did little damage, a few dwellings up in the mountains behind the town, that was all. But it caused a rock slide, yeah? The entrance to that cove was quite closed up."
He looked at their incredulous faces.
"Well, this is most strange. But you must believe me. I know this coast intimately. There is no other place with which you could have confused it. Ask any of the boatmen on the quay. They will tell you the cove is gone, filled in when the cliff slipped, and there is no other. Now you should have brandy. I think you need it."
Later, boarding their own boat, they paused, shivering in the cold starlight, to check their mooring lines. "We were there," the woman said, knowing where his thoughts lay. "We even wished we need never leave it." Beside her in the cockpit, he dropped his head into his hands.
"Then the laughter," he said. "The laughter."
As their voyage had first focused and then drained their energies, they had entered an altered state, suffered a sea change.
"Where would we be now?" she whispered, "if our wish had been granted?"
They began to feel a land breeze flowing out from the town, bringing with it the scent of aromatic food cooking in the hot kitchens of tavernas, noisy with music. Human voices rose and fell, drawing them back. The lights went out along the quay. Tomorrow, rational, sceptical even, they might accept a logical explanation. But for what was left of that chill starlit night, her question would lie unanswered.
Lap of the Gods by Julia Stoneham was read by June Barry. The producer was Viv Beebe, and it was first broadcast in June 1997.